I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of.
Welcome to Susie Larson Live. I'm always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. And you know what? This is a special day today because my friend Dr. Jill Carnahan joins me again today. She's a busy gal. She's got so much going on. And for her to give us her time to answer your questions on health and healing is such a treasured gift to all of us. You know, she's fast becoming a world-renowned expert in the area of mold toxicity and as well as other autoimmune issues. She's both an MD and a functional med doctor based out of Colorado. She's an expert in the health and healing process. She's a woman of God, and best of all, she's one of my friends, and I love her. Today, we're going to talk about COVID. We're going to talk about how do you know if you need to detox and what does that look like? We've got some questions that came in from listeners we couldn't get to last time about sleep issues and other questions about mast cell and mold toxicity. The text line is open. If we get a call screener, I'll let you know. But right now, you can email or text your questions. You can text them to 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or you can email them at susie@myfaithradio.com. Quick announcement, though, before we hear from Dr. Jill. Now, just got days left before the sign-up for the online study is closed. Would you believe we have 2,200 people signed up from 17 countries walking through my book, Fully Alive? One thing I just want you to know is you'll get two emails a week. There'll be an embedded two-minute video and then some content from the book. If you've got the book and you've got the DVD sessions, you can take it to a deeper level, but you don't need the book. I will be hopping on Facebook Live a couple times, like every other week, and we'll let you know about those dates and times. But this isn't one of those things you skim through, you rush through. It's not like an email that you kind of glaze over like your other emails and expect to get anything out of it. You'll get out of it what you can put into it. So I pray you give your soul some time to reflect on the things we talk about, like shame and fear, selfishness, insecurity, and their direct impact on your physiology. This is not for the faint of heart, and it's not for the fast-paced, busy person. Slow down and give yourself some time, some soul space to really ponder. I pray that you'll do that. If you still want to sign up, registration closes in just a few days, but it's free on our website at myfaithradio.com. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Dr. Jill Carnahan is board certified in both family medicine and integrative holistic medicine. She owns her own practice, Flatiron Functional Medicine in Louisville, Colorado, and we're so blessed to have her with us today. Oh, my goodness, she's writing the most amazing book. It'll be a little bit before it's out, but wait till you see it. Dr. Jill, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you, Susie. I am so excited to be here with you.
Well, we're looking forward to the conversation. Our listeners loved you when you were on last time. So tell me this. Is there a verse you've been pondering these days you can share with us?
Oh, I would love to, and I'm going to cheat because I have two, but I couldn't choose. One goes back 3 months, right before the pandemic hit, and I remember walking up one of my favorite hikes and just praising God and worshiping with music, and I just felt Esther 4:14, and it was, perhaps you were born for such a time as this. And wow. I remember just like realizing the gravity of what God was telling me in that moment of just all of your experiences, Jill, all the things I've taken you through are preparing you for what I have next for you. And I feel like a lot of your listeners will just understand that and feel that in their hearts today. Perhaps you out there listening were born for such a time as this. And the crazy thing about that is this time that we're living in is about as crazy as it's gotten, at least in my lifetime. There's a lot of chaos, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of uncertainty. And yet, to me, it's like everything that God has taken me through thus far is preparing me for such a time as this. So that was the one that's been on my heart for months through this pandemic and through the chaos and through the uncertainty and through people having to experience things they've never have had to experience before. And then the one that this morning touched me, and I am sure you've read this before, today it just really shot me to the heart. It was Psalm 91, and it's a long psalm, so I'm just going to read two verses from there that really were special from verse 9 through 11, actually three verses. If you say the Lord is my refuge and you make the Most High your dwelling, no harm will overtake you, no disaster will come near you, for he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. And to me, it's just like God's, hand, even in the midst of chaos and uncertainty, is number one, guiding us and guarding us. And number two, I just feel him walking ahead and kind of like pushing out the shrubs and clearing the brush and making the way for such a time as this. And I just feel him preparing us and protecting us in this process, and really anyone listening, no matter what we're going through.
That is so good. You know, it is amazing to me, as someone who just cares so much about you and has prayed for you. It is, you know, he's preparing all of us for such a time as this, but there's a unique place in the kingdom and in the world right now for someone who's been equipped in the way you have. I mean, you've battled cancer, you've battled mold toxicity, you healed basically from Crohn's, you're an MD, yeah. You're a functional med doctor, and you're a woman of the word. And that incredible combination in a day when people are afraid, when people are sick, it is really a beautiful thing to watch how he's positioned you and what he's about to do in and through you. So I just celebrate that so much. Well, as
Thank
I told you,
you Susie.
Yes, absolutely. And we've got so many questions that came in that we couldn't get to last time. But one of them, you know, because if you haven't signed up for Jill's newsletter, you got to do that. Would they go to drjillhealth.com? Is that the place to sign up? Or Jill Carnahan?
Yeah, drjillhealth.com. Or JillCarnahan.com. Either one, you'll get a little pop-up there, and it's all free. I just put blogs and information, and yes, I would love to have you join my community.
It's just amazing. The emails that come out are about gut health, about detox. I mean, they're so substantial. And if you want to hear from Dr. Jill on a regular basis, you got to sign up for that. It's fantastic. But what I've seen is a number of your posts on COVID. Your insights have been very interesting to me. So what have you learned about COVID? What has surprised you about it, and what should we know?
Oh, I love this, because it is a unique virus, if I've ever seen one. The behavior of it is just so different in certain ways, and I'll tell you what I've seen. Number one, it's incredibly contagious, which is why we're dealing with it the way we are, even compared to influenza or some of the past pandemics. There's things about the receptors and the way this virus works that it is a little bit more contagious than normal. The other thing that's interesting to me as a functional medicine practitioner is the sequelae. So what that means is the people who are getting the virus now, normally if someone has influenza, they have maybe 10 days, 7 to 10 days of illness, and then they recover, and a week or so later, they're back to their normal life, running, active. And pretty much 100% of patients that I've dealt with that have had this virus, the sequelae, meaning like the fatigue they experience and some of those types of symptoms, the shortness of breath, the exercise intolerance, they recover. In fact, 100% of people that I've seen have recovered, so that's the good news for you listeners. But the other thing is, a lot of times it takes them several months to feel back to normal, the fatigue, the shortness of breath. And I think the reasons are that this virus has a really inflammatory effect. It actually mirrors what the body does in the gut when there's bacterial coatings that leak into the immune system and cause inflammation. You might think, what in the world does the gut have to do with the virus? But the exact same cytokines, these are chemical messengers that tell the body, oh, red alert, there's something bad going on here. Those same cytokines act in many different processes. So like if you have gut inflammation or you have COVID-19, the same exact cytokine response is responsible for the inflammatory things. And even, as Susie, as you and I know, with mold, it's very, very similar. So the inflammation that this virus causes, so when you get the virus, that inflammatory effect lasts for a long, long time, so several months, and then people get back to normal. But I've been surprised, and I think what we're going to see because of this is down the road, the next several years, we're going to have more brain inflammation, we're going to have more autoimmunity, and we're going to have more things that come after this viral infection that have been due to that inflammation.
Because it's taken a toll, basically, is because you go so long with an inflammatory response in your body?
Yeah, not so much that it lasts so long. So the other thing about that, the reason why it seems to last several months is this: it can cause an increase in microclots, and so the clots have to resolve, and that inflammation has to resolve, and it just takes a lot of time. But the sequelae happen because it's almost like you light the match and start the fire on the inflammatory process. And it literally, Susie, is the exact same inflammatory process for sears and for mold toxicity. And as you well know, you can get out of a moldy home, but then 6 to 18 months later, you're still dealing with that inflammatory response as your body starts to quiet down and calm down because, you know, it's like, wait, everything's safe now. You no longer need to react. But that process, even if you get out of the exposure, lasts a lot of months. It's a very similar idea with the virus. That trigger to the inflammatory response is sometimes lasting longer than the virus itself. and people are having trouble afterwards.
Now, I heard that those who have low D levels are the ones who don't fare well with this virus, but those who have higher D levels tend to, if they get it, they bounce back rather quickly. Have you heard that as well?
Yes, so there's definitely several studies out there that correlate vitamin D, and if you look at it, it's absolutely astounding because the level of vitamin D, if it's above 30, there literally were almost no deaths in that population, whereas almost all the deaths and the more serious symptoms were for those with the vitamin D level below 30. So I think that that is absolutely true, and it makes sense because vitamin D helps control the immune system. One of the other things, like I said, that we're seeing is there was, early on, there's risk factors for heart disease, diabetes, obesity, previous lung issues, but a lot of those underlying conditions have to do with metabolic issues like insulin resistance, prediabetes, gut inflammation. So what we know to be true is if you have a really healthy gut, you're not diabetic, you're not prediabetic, you're normal weight, you eat healthy, you're going to fare a lot better than someone who is overweight, diabetic or pre-diabetic, has heart disease, because again, the same inflammatory responses are similar. And if you're like prepped or primed with diabetes, which actually has a similar inflammatory response, and then you get the virus on top, you're going to have more trouble.
We're going to pause here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more because you've written a couple of blog posts on this, on ways to shore up your immunities to protect against the virus. But there tend to be a lot of questions around vitamin D because it's a fat-soluble vitamin, so you can take it in toxic amounts. So what is a good level for most people in different body sizes, body types? We'll talk about that and more. If you've got questions for Dr. Jill, you sure can text them in at 877-933-2484 or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Dr. Jill Carnahan, just a moment.
Yeah, everybody hurts sometimes, I know that's what they say. But right now it seems this loneliness won't go away. Yeah. Can anybody feel this
heart? Thanks so much for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to my friend Dr. Jill Carnahan about health and the healing process. And before the break, we were talking about COVID and what we need to know about just shoring up our immunities. And one thing I'd read and heard multiple times is that those with low vitamin D levels don't do so well. Those with higher D levels do much better. But it's not like a vitamin B or C that you can just take as much as you want and your body will get rid of the rest. But I think at times we're so afraid of that, we probably don't take enough. So maybe teach us a little bit about vitamin D.
Sure. So you're right, Susie. The fat-soluble vitamins are A, D, K, and E. And if you have trouble remembering that, you can remember the name KADE, and then those are all the vitamins, K-A-D-E. Basically, fat-soluble vitamins are stored in the fatty tissue, so if you take too much, you can store and get an excess. And this is why there's concerns of, you know, vitamin A with pregnancy and some of these things that we have heard about. So vitamin D. Vitamin D is fat-soluble. An ideal range is anywhere from 50 to 80. Even up to 100 can be safe. Typically, most doctors agree that above 100 is considered toxic. However, I have seen patients go up to 110 or 120. They have no toxic side effects. We just have them stop taking their D for a short period of time. So it doesn't necessarily mean if your level is 101 that you're going to have any problems. You just want to really be a little cautious. I would say most people do well at a level taking a vitamin D from 2,500 to 5,000 per day. And that's if they're not getting loads of sunshine. So sunshine, that's why it's called the sunshine vitamin, but that will actually create vitamin D through our skin. But most people think, oh, I'm outside a few minutes a day and this and that. What you really need is most of your body surface uncovered, so basically like in a bathing suit in the sunshine for 30 to 60 minutes a day to really get that level. And then, of course, nowadays we have harmful radiation causing skin cancers and things, so there is some risk to that if you're not careful. So a lot of people do take vitamin D. Most of my patients take 5,000 through the months of October through March, or the winter months when the latitude here is less sunshine, and then about 2,500 from April through September. That tends to be a good amount. And again, on your serum labs, about 50 to 80 is ideal. If you've had cancer or immune issues or a suppressed immune system, you could push it up to that 80 level.
That's so interesting. All right. Any other things we can do and need to do to shore up our immunities amidst this global pandemic?
Yeah. So Gosh, vitamin C is water soluble and super non-toxic. I mean, some people take up to 25 grams a day, which I wouldn't recommend, or you'll be sitting on the toilet. It's another way to do a colon prep. And so if any of you have had to go through that procedure before, you know what that means. So vitamin C can be as a laxative if taken orally in high doses. So again, I wouldn't recommend that, but it's very safe. So it's very, very safe. It's water soluble. You don't get toxic from too much vitamin C. And typical doses, 500 to 1,000 a day, is very, very normal. Some patients I'll use a little bit more, but again, with your doctor's discretion, you can decide what dose is best for you. Super safe vitamin, and most of us need it. We can get it from citrus fruits and fresh things. There's something called scurvy, which is vitamin C deficiency. It used to happen on the sailors on these ships that would go across the ocean for 3 months at a time, because the lemons and limes and oranges they had on the ship would start to rot after the first 30 days. And so the last 2 months, they had no access to vitamin C. Another really great antioxidant, especially with this virus, is zinc. Zinc is real powerful. Zinc can lower copper. So you do want to be cautious about other things and other minerals, and make sure that if you're taking any high-dose zinc that your doctor checks copper levels as well. Because if you are deficient in copper, you can drive copper down by taking too much zinc. Otherwise, zinc is pretty safe, especially in doses of 15 to 30 milligrams per day. Glutathione. Glutathione is a kind of a funny-sounding lung antioxidant, but it's a master antioxidant. And when we get exposed to environmental toxins in the air, or mold, or heavy metals, or parabens in our perfumes, this will deplete our glutathione levels. So many of us are walking around with lower glutathione because of our just toxic world and our exposures. And our body makes this through the liver, so it is something that we make. But taking liposomal glutathione can be incredibly helpful to boost those levels and help create kind of a barrier against the toxicities of the world and help us to fight infection. I mentioned liposomal because if you just take a glutathione pill and it's not in the right form, it will be ineffective in the stomach. So you need to take a form that crosses the membranes through your mouth, like a liposomal form, or there's certain forms called S-acetyl glutathione or other forms that are better absorbable. And N-acetylcysteine, another antioxidant, really powerful, especially good for lung support. That one can be really helpful nowadays too. Those are probably my top ones with this pandemic and supporting the immune system. And vitamin D is kind of right there at the top.
Interesting. What about, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about echinacea. Now, I've heard some people, like with allergies, don't do as well on echinacea. It maybe boosts them up a little bit, but then they start to feel like they've been exposed to plant allergies. Did I hear that right, or what do you think about echinacea?
Yeah, so the herbs that are there's the top three, and I can tell you about their personalities just a little bit. There's echinacea, there's andrographis, and there's astragalus. And these are all great herbs to kind of push the immune system into a little bit of an overdrive. So if you are sick, it's amazing to help you fight. Elderberry is another one in this class, and all of these have antiviral effects and immune-stimulating effects. What I feel with these herbs, though, pretty much all of them, from elderberry to andrographis to echinacea to astragalus, is if you were to take them every day for months at a time, it's too stimulating. So all of these herbs, I typically recommend patients pulse. So say it's cold or flu season, they would pulse it 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. Or if they start to be around, you know, children in daycare or someone else who's sick, or they start to have symptoms, or they're getting on a plane to fly, which none of us are really doing much nowadays, those would be the times to take those herbs to protect you. But those herbs, I feel like, are not best taken long-term every day.
Very good. Okay, here's a listener question. New to your show, but I love it. Here's a question for Dr. Jill. I have two autoimmune diseases, MCTD. Is that mast cell? Is that another way to say it? MCTD and Hashimoto's. I have allergies, cat, mold, and dust. Now chemical odors such as outgassing from carpet, new furniture, causes burning sinuses, sore throat, and headache. How can I best help my body deal with the chemical allergies? Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so MCTD is kind of this generic. I know that. So it's mixed connective tissue diseases. So this is like a garbage basket term, kind of like fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue. These things describe a set of symptoms and kind of a conglomeration of things that go all in this basket. When basically a lot of doctors are like, well, we don't really know what you have, but you're tired. So, and you've been tired for more than 6 months, more days on than not. Let's call this chronic fatigue. Now, for me as a functional medicine doctor, I'm looking underneath the hood of the car like a mechanic to say what wires are crossed, what things are going wrong with the engine, and how can we actually fix the problem. So labels like chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and mixed connective tissue disorder tell me kind of the ballpark of where we're looking, but they don't tell me why this happened. And so mixed connective tissue disease is kind of a generic term for autoimmune disease. It is rare, and it can cause problems with collagen formation and inflammation and those kinds of things. But again, it's kind of a catch-all phrase. So back to chemical sensitivity, she asked about volatile organic solvents and smells and things that bother her. One thing you can know if you're very chemically sensitive, that means we're all born with a toxic, a bucket to fill with toxins, like our ability to detoxify. And I've used the bucket analogy before, but I think you'll understand this. I was born with a very small bucket, which means when I got exposed to chemicals on the farm and then gluten, which I was sensitive to and didn't know it, my bucket filled up really quickly. And at 25, I developed cancer. At 26, I developed Crohn's disease. So this person who's asking the question, her bucket, when the bucket gets full, it starts to spill over the top. You can imagine the water reaching the threshold and spilling over the top. That means your toxic ability to detox has been compromised because you have no margin. So when someone has chemical sensitivities, their bucket's full. So all that to set up, if someone is chemically sensitive, their toxic load is high and their bucket is full. So even though there may be 1,000 different toxins in that bucket filling up the water level, I as a doctor to help them, I don't need to know the name of all of them. I just need to know how to give them enough margin so that their water level goes down. And if we get margin back, the body will do what it was created to do, which is detoxify. So often when I'm treating someone like your listener, we'll look for heavy metals or parabens or phthalates or chemicals or mold and try to decrease their load and detoxify them so that they get margin back in order that they can be less sensitive.
So your body is in constant alert, high alert, when you're so toxic that it suppresses the immune system. So to get some of that margin back, your body starts to kick in. Boy, we are fearfully and wonderfully made, aren't we?
Yes. Yes, we are. It's so complex.
We have a hard break here in about a minute, but would you say when someone gets a fibromyalgia diagnosis, they shouldn't just leave it at that and accept that, that there's more that they could search to find the cause behind it?
Oh, 100%. If you have autoimmunity, if you have fibromyalgia, if you have chronic fatigue, chronic migraine, any neurodegenerative disorder like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, all of these things, there's root causes. So I would say seek answers for sure.
Wow, very good. All right, we're going to pause here. I'm talking to Dr. Jill Carnahan. And the next question when we come back is about a person who's got inflammatory issues, gut issues, and wants to know how these issues can affect our gut-brain connection, affect sleep. And also, she's addicted to sugar. We're going to talk a little bit about the impact of sugar on our bodies. You know, we all love a good treat once in a while, but we'd probably need to know on a deeper level how chronic use or consistent use of sugar is affecting our health issues. So talking to Dr. Jill Carnahan. We'll be back in a moment. You're having a great, great day. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to my friend Dr. Jill Carnahan. She's got an amazing newsletter. If you want to sign up, you'll get these emails on gut health, the gut-brain connection, how to shore up your immunities in the midst of COVID. So much great insight. You can go to drjillhealth.com if you're interested in that. And Virginia, I see your text here, so we'll get to that in just a moment. If you've got questions on the health and healing process, you can text them in to 877-933 2484 877 933 2484 or email me, Susie at myfaithradio.com. But this listener emailed in last time, I believe, and she says, okay, I know I have inflammation and many gut nutritional issues. I'm intrigued by learning about how nutrition can affect your gut-brain connection and your sleep. I do not sleep well at all, and I'm plagued by fight or flight. How can I break my sugar addiction? I know it's making everything worse, but it's an addiction. There's kind of a lot there, but tackle what you want to there, Dr. Jill.
Sure. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, oh, I love this question because it's like pulled in all the pieces of functional medicine kind of in one question. So gut brain, let's start there. So there is a direct connection of what's happening in your gut to not only your brain, but the rest of your body. Now, I'm going to tell you something that might surprise you. If any of you have celiac or gluten intolerance or non-celiac gluten sensitivity, you might already know this. But people think gluten's all about the gut. So if I don't have diarrhea or constipation or gut pain, I must not be sensitive to gluten. Well, the interesting thing that about 50% of people who present with gluten intolerance and gluten issues actually present with fatigue, brain fog, insomnia, just difficulty with concentration and memory. So it dramatically affects the brain, and this is a food that acts on the gut lining. And the reason that happens is because our interface with the world is through the gut lumen. So if you think of this long tube going from your mouth all the way through your to your bottom, this tube is where we interface with the world and with our food and with maybe, you know, back in the day, microbes from the dirt on our carrot that we grabbed out of the garden. So this is how we interface with the world, and this is how our immune system learns what's normal and what's not. And from 0 to 2 years old, whether it's things that we touch and put in our mouth or the food that we eat, that's basic training camp for the immune system, and it gets to learn, ooh, this guy's a microbe like a parasite or a bad salmonella infection from too long sitting out coleslaw at the family picnic, or this is just a carrot, or this is just grapes, or this is just pineapple. And so the immune system starts to learn. What happens with gluten sensitivity and brain inflammation and a lot of these things is the immune system gets confused, or there's a permeability, a barrier issue on this lining to the gut. So things like an antigen from corn, and that just means like a particle from the corn, slips in through the tiles that line the gut and crosses over into the bloodstream where it has no business being. So we should break that corn down into amino acids and fatty acids and carbohydrates, but sometimes that corn doesn't get broken down and it slips through, and then the immune system, like, what in the world is this doing here? We need to attack. And instead of it being an attack on a virus or bacteria or a bad guy, it's an attack on the food that we're eating. And that whole inflammatory cascade that happens from a trigger like corn or gluten or dairy or sugar will cause an inflammatory response. And as we talked about at the beginning of the show, the cytokines, the inflammatory molecules that are produced by this interaction are the exact same ones that happen in this virus like COVID-19 or that happen in diabetes or that happen in some of the neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. So even though these diseases seem like they're totally different from one another, a lot of the core mechanism can be because of this inflammatory cascade on the gut. So back to sugar. Sugar, we have such a high compared to our grandparents and great-grandparents. Our diet contains a lot more cane sugar and sugar in general than it used to. It's added to foods because it makes them highly addictive. They did a study with rats, and they gave them either cocaine, which is obviously highly addictive, or sugar water. And guess what? The rats chose every time the sugar water because it created a response in their brain that mimicked an addictive potential. So any of you who struggle with sugar addiction, the battle is real. There's a very addictive component to sugar. And what will happen with that sugar is it feeds the wrong microbes in your gut. So you get this imbalance of microbes, and sometimes it will feed yeast and candida, and those guys will produce lots of inflammation as well.
Hmm. Do you recommend zero sugar, or what's your recommendation?
Yeah, so if you, I'll usually ask people, you know, do you have a white coating on your tongue? Do you experience gas and bloating? Do you ever have vaginal yeast infections, or do you have a craving for carbohydrates? Do you have brain fog? Do you have fatigue in the afternoon or after you eat a meal? All of these things can be signs or symptoms of either carbohydrate intolerance or an overgrowth of fungus. And what happens is so fascinating because that yeast, like candida, produces a byproduct in the gut called acetaldehyde. This is a long word, and it's a type of formaldehyde, but it's the exact same chemical produced with a hangover. It's the exact same chemical produced when your body processes alcohol. So the reality is people who have candida overgrowth may often feel a little bit hungover. They're not drinking alcohol, but the yeast is producing that. So if someone has a list of symptoms and they're trying to get a handle on that yeast, they really need to cut back on carbohydrates. I could give you a number anywhere from 25 to 50 to 100 carbs a day, but the number isn't so much of an important thing. And it doesn't mean you can't eat any fruit or anything with sweeteners in it, but typically it's very helpful to get that under control if you avoid dried fruit, fruit juice, the high glycemic fruits like grapes and pineapple and mango. Eat things like whole berries, citrus, apples. Those are lower glycemic. And then I usually do recommend avoid refined carbohydrates. Those would be like pizza and pasta and donuts and bagels and all those things that are made from flour and sugar. And if you're really want to be careful, you can go on a grain-free diet because grains are the most commonly contaminated food source of mold. So often there's mold in our corn and our wheat and our barley and our rye. So mostly grain-free, lower sugar, whole fruits, no juices. And then, of course, avoiding sugar and alcohol in general would do a lot of good as well.
My daughter-in-law is grain-free, and she just loves a cookbook that she found called Against All Grain. And the stuff that she's able to make out of that cookbook, she's like, I'm not deprived. Once she really learned the things that she could make that are grain-free, she said, she's just found a way to make it work. But I wonder how many people are walking around with a measure of candida. They feel lethargic. They feel crummy. Their bucket is sort of full in a different way and don't know it. What would be your guess?
Oh, Susie, it's astronomical because yeast is opportunistic. So basically what that means is it responds to a weakened system. And nowadays, because of our chemical load, because of our stresses, because of our lack of sleep, because of our EMFs, because of our environmental toxic load, most of us have a weaker immune system. And so the little bug called candida is taking advantage of a lot more people than it used to. And like you said, it creates more of a toxic load. And what's very interesting to me is most people think of the chemicals, the toxins that fill the bucket that we talked about as external. So I breathe this chemical air. I live in a moldy house. I get mercury fillings or I have these exposures. But the truth is with the things that we're talking about right now, which is bacteria excess in the gut or candida in the gut, you're getting an internal toxic load. So you're actually getting from inside out things that fill up that bucket.
I wonder if someone were to go, I mean, really like getting under 100 grams of carbs a day, that's pretty significant. But I would imagine, I mean, just as full disclosure, this is something I deal with. And I'm not a big sweet eater. Like I have rice, milk, and a few pieces of frozen fruit in my protein shake. But it is an issue for me for some reason. But people feel better once, if they have this issue, they feel quite a bit better once they bring that carb load down, don't they?
They really do, Susie. And if you are someone who has a lot, I always ask people these questions and I get to know, like, say you have a dinner of pasta and you're like so sleepy after your pasta dinner, there's probably an issue with candida because you just gave it a huge carb load and then you got a massive dump of the toxins that we talked about, like acetaldehyde, and then you feel sleepy and non-motivated and not so well. So it's actually compared to say you had a little piece of chicken and roasted vegetables and you feel pretty good. So there is differences in how food makes us feel. And full disclosure, Susie, a huge part of my path through cancer and Crohn's was dealing with a severe chronic candida overgrowth myself. So I've been on this journey and I have been, So I want to tell your listeners because a lot of practitioners, even if you see a great functional doctor, they'll say, let's do an 8-week course of this herb that will treat yeast, which is great. A lot of people, this is a kind of a chronic issue, and I've been on candida suppressive herbs for 12 years or more, and I've also been on a low-carb, grain-free diet for longer than that. And just like your friend or sister, you said, I don't feel restricted at all. I get all the wonderful foods that I enjoy, but I literally have been on a grain-free diet for life because it keeps me so much healthier.
Wow, I appreciate that so much. Now the questions are starting to come in. Wouldn't you know, we're coming up on our last segment. Yes, I love it. But I promised this listener we would ask about this. She said, I recently heard of a diagnosis called pyroluria. I probably just butchered it. I think I said it right before the show. And wanted to see if you could comment on it. I've never heard of it. Some say it's fake. Some say it's true. What's your take on it, Dr. Jill?
Yeah, so I do. You can test for this. You can test for it. test for urine pyrroles, and it's a very complex biochemical pathway. I won't go into that and bore you all, but I'll say this simply. It tends to be present as kind of social anxiety, and it's something that if people have it, have had it since birth. So when they look back, they're like, oh, yeah, when I was 5, I didn't like to go to kindergarten, or when I was 12, I always felt like anxious in social groups. There's this kind of weird, so it's not weird, just it's unusual, and they recognize it when they start to realize they have this. And the great thing about pyroluria is these symptoms can be completely abolished with the right dose of vitamin B6 and zinc. So it's actually very, very treatable. It needs to treat a very high dose of both B6 and zinc, and both of those in high dose can be toxic. So this would be something that you absolutely would want to work with a functional medicine or integrative practitioner, because those vitamins for someone who has pyroluria can be life-saving and game-changing and literally take away their anxiety, their social anxiety. But if someone doesn't have that, the doses that are required are really quite high and could potentially be toxic. So it's definitely best to talk to your doctor about that one.
I appreciate that. Okay, here's this one. Question on weight. History of Hashimoto, oncology. I was on a no-gluten, dairy, caffeine, sugar diet for more than a year and didn't lose any weight. Gave up on dieting, gaining weight very fast. I now weigh 280 pounds.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I can't imagine the struggle, especially when you've tried and been stuck. I see this, Susie, every day with women who are doing all the right things, and they'll tell me, gosh, I work out every day. I restricted my calories to 500 a day, which is incredibly restrictive, and they don't lose weight. So back to our toxic load. This is important. Dilution is the solution to pollution. Now, in this case, what I mean by that is our body knows when it's toxic. And if it's toxic, it's going to do what it knows best, which is dilute the toxins. Guess how we dilute toxins? We put fat on, because fat will dilute the storage of the toxins. So if you're unable to lose weight, number one, mold is a huge trigger to weight gain and leptin resistance. And usually what I'll see those kinds of stories are 30, 40, 50 pounds in 3 months, with no changes in my diet. I don't know what's going on. I feel tired, lethargic. I'm not changing my diet. I'm exercising, and I've gained 30 pounds. Check for mold. Number two is if you have a toxic load and you haven't dealt with that and done detoxification, often your body will hang on to weight, and it's like this vice grip. It won't let it go no matter what you do, and you're fighting against a lost cause until you detoxify. So I will always look at toxic load before I do a weight loss program, because I know that that will sabotage them if they're not dealing with it. And the Hashimoto's she threw in there is a disease that often comes from environmental triggers. So it's another clue that there may be a toxic load in that situation.
Well, when we come back, you know, another Valentine just writes in and says, how do you empty the toxin bucket? Did you review that already? Or if not, can we repeat that and revisit it? So we'll talk about that on the other side, how sure. to detox. And there's different reasons for that bucket being loaded up. And are there different avenues for detoxing, or is it kind of a one-size-fits-all? Talking to Dr. Jill Carnahan, I see the questions. You guys have been so quiet, and now the questions are coming in like a ticker tape parade. But it's okay, because I'm going to write them down. We'll get as many as we can, and we'll, Lord willing, be able to bring her back and continue on with the questions. Talking to Dr. Jill Carnahan. Hey, we'll be back in just a minute. Got this. You know, we are so committed to seeing you be mobilized in everything God wants you to do. And you know, I'm very passionate about health. So we do cover health every once in a while on the show, because if you don't feel well, it's hard to show up and bring your best, give your best. And we just believe so passionately that there are things you can do, there are things that God can do, and we partner with God so that we can move towards health. And I know my friend Dr. Jill Carnahan feels that way. As I said, she's a world-renowned expert in mold and other autoimmune issues. She's just a precious friend, and I just love the wisdom that she offers. We're having a great conversation. And the questions, you know, you dear listeners, I could just hug you and then grab your shoulders, because it was a little quiet, and now we're getting so many questions we won't be able to get to them all. But first question, a listener asked, can you tell us about the herb that you're taking for candida? They've been battling for years and would just love to know. Just any extra help would be great.
Sure. Well, I'm kind of going to give you a list because there's no one-size-fits-all, and Candida can be funny, so combinations can be better. Any of the major, I always say there's professional grade and there's supplement grade. Susie mentioned my website, drjillhealth.com. We have tons of stuff on that site. You can get them anywhere, but make sure you get them from a reputable source, your doctor, your pharmacy, or some professional grade, because it does make a difference in quality. So back to Candida. So things like oregano, caprylic acid, pot de argo, olive leaf extract, berberine. There's a, let's see if there's undelicaic acid is another one. Those are probably the top ones that I use, and I often use combinations of those. Grapeseed extract, I forgot to mention, that's another really good one. And they all have slightly different properties. Some people tolerate some better than others. And again, any professional grade that you use of a product will often have a combination product that's made for treating Candida. Some of them, like oregano, are a little bit more harsh, and I don't usually recommend for long-term use. Others, like olive leaf and caprylic acid and pot de argo, are fairly safe for long-term use. And it also depends. If you have a very weakened immune system like I did from cancer, that's a little bit of a different ballgame because I need that support for immune system long-term versus if you're just in a stressful period of time and you're fighting the candida, you may only need it for a few months. I will say an 8-week course in my experience is usually not quite enough. Most people need 2 to 3 months and sometimes up to 6 months. That would be a real common course of some of these herbal treatments.
And if someone has a hard time with, let's say, caprylic acid or one of these where they it's good for them, but their body just can't handle it, what do you suggest?
Ooh, great question. There's two things that can happen. So you could have an allergy or sensitivity to an herb, just like you can to foods. So if you continue to have a reaction, say you have one cap of olive leaf, and every time you get a rash or you feel a bad headache or migraine, that's probably a reaction that's not a die-off reaction, which I'll talk about in one moment, and you shouldn't be taking that herb. If it continues and doesn't abate or get better with time, that's not something you should be on. However, what happens a lot of times is when you start to attack these buggers, they do not like it. The die-off, or what we also call a Herxheimer reaction, can happen, and this can feel terrible. You can be tired or foggy or headaches or joint pain or all of these things that kind of flare as you're killing off that candida, and the dead dying yeast will produce all kinds of garbage in your system and create those symptoms. If that happens, how you know is when you take the first dose, you feel terrible. But as you take the second, third, fourth dose, you feel better and better and better. And as Susie was asking, what I usually recommend in that case, say the dose is 4 caps a day. For that patient, I'll recommend start with a half a cap or 1 cap a day or even a pinch of that kind of herb so that you start incredibly low. There's a lot of these things that come in tinctures. Tinctures are great because you can control the dose if you're incredibly sensitive. Compared to a capsule, you might be able to take 1 drop in water. And as small as that may sound, it may be all that your body can tolerate initially, and then you work up to a full dose.
That is so important to know because someone might take it, say, I tried that, and then they decide not to.
Yes.
And I promise we get to Valentine's question about detox, but just a side thing about supplements. I'd heard that you buy supplements online with a major, let's just say it, like Amazon. You're not going to be, you may get a bottle with a, looks like a true logo with junk inside. So you are taking a risk. I mean, is that accurate to say?
Yeah, Susie, and I am not here to drive business. Any practitioner that you can get a good quality, you can go anywhere you want, but make sure you get a reputable source because, yes, there's not temperature control on those. We have people who bring in a vitamin B from Amazon, and it's like a weird color of the capsule, and we know that this is not the real product. So I've seen it in real form. I've seen that happen.
So it's worth it if you can. Okay, so Valentine wanted us to revisit when you have your bucket is your toxin bucket is full.
Yeah.
How do you empty it?
What do you do? So, you know, as functional medicine doctor, as we were talking about, we use nutrition and supplements, but some of the best ways to detoxify are not more pills. I'm going to give you just a few nutrients that are core for detox. And again, you do this in conjunction with your doctor because not everybody tolerates all of these, but some of the core, you want to support liver, gallbladder. So you're going to support, we talked about glutathione before during this hour, and acetylcysteine. Those are two core nutrients for detoxification that are helpful for many people. Lipoic acid can also be very helpful. And one of my cores in almost every patient is milk thistle, because milk thistle really supports the liver. Bitters like Swedish bitters or other bitters like absinthe, one of the original bitters, can be incredibly powerful at stimulating bile flow. This is a whole other story, but the bile acids are often where the toxins are stored. So if you can stimulate the gallbladder to release bile, and even if you don't have a gallbladder, you still have bile that leaks out of your common bile duct, so it doesn't really matter if you don't have a gallbladder. You still want to stimulate that bile flow so that you clear out toxins through your gut. Those are all core liver nutrients for detox. A lot of patients, if they're dealing with a certain type of toxin like heavy metals or mold, they'll take things like binders. Binders grab a hold of the toxins and escort them out through the gut. And this can be clay, charcoal, zeolite, glycomannans, and there's others, but those are some of the core ones. And then I said there's some things that aren't supplements. So these are core principles that are really helpful in the detox. Infrared sauna, that's a wonderful way to decrease the load of parabens and phthalates and chemicals and VOCs through your skin, through sweating. If you don't have a sauna or can't afford it, and you go out in the, you know, in the hot weather and you sweat, just sweating is helpful. Epsom salt baths are one of my favorite gentle ways to detox. I take them every single night when I'm home and even on the road. Sometimes I'll have Epsom salt delivered to the hotel. Again, this is back in the day when we used to travel, right? But Epsom salt, gentle, incredibly powerful. And you want to put, I buy the 6-pound bags and put a half a bag in my bath, not none of those one cup deals, because you want to saturate the water with that magnesium sulfate so that it penetrates into the skin and gets absorbed. And that's how the detox works. You can really put quite a bit in your bath. You can add essential oils. Hot and cold showers, it's called hydrotherapy in naturopathic medicine, where you do a normal hot shower and you end with a minute or two of cool or cold water. That will stimulate lymphatics. You can do dry brushing before you get into the shower. And then something that's kind of controversial but really powerful is coffee enemas. I learned this from the European medical doctors, and I thought, oh my goodness, we don't talk about this in medical school. But what I realized is that's a really powerful way to stimulate glutathione. So some people also do that.
And you wouldn't just want to do your own coffee enema. You'd actually want to get a kit, just saying, friends. I think.
Correct.
I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into Exactly.
Yep. Just in case somebody. Anyway, Leanne wants to know, will supplements say third-party tested if they are, or how do you know for sure if you found a good supplement?
Yeah, so they'll usually have GMP certified, and what we call professional grade usually goes through a physician pharmacist or some regulation committee. There's a lot of them that you can directly buy from consumer nowadays, but they're usually called, so that GMP certified is a big part of it. And then looking at their ingredient list, if there is any dyes or colorings or things that start, that end with paraben in there, those are absolutely not okay. And I would say typically if you buy something at Walgreens, Target, Walmart, any of those, you know, general stores, those are not the best quality places to get your supplements.
No, appreciate that so much. Just got about 2 minutes left. There's so many more questions I have and pages left for you, but I want to talk just a moment about histamine intolerance, because I think that's also just my guess. Again, I joke that I'm not a doctor, but I like to play one on radio. I do believe many people are walking around with histamine intolerance and don't even know it. They get pressure in their head or they get headaches and they don't even know that this is something that's actually treatable. What do you say?
Oh, 100%, Susie. And this can affect so many systems in the body. It can cause migraine headaches. It can cause interstitial cystitis, so bladder irritation. It can cause Crohn's and colitis and inflammation in the gut. It can cause brain dysfunction like memory, foggy thinking. It definitely affects the skin. So often people will have rashes or hives or what we call dermatographia. If you took your nail and just pulled it along your skin and that red mark stays there for 2 minutes, that's a pretty classic sign of histamine issues in the skin. So there's a ton of stuff. I wrote a blog on this, and if you just Google Jill Carnahan and histamine, you'll find that information there. There's a lot of other docs that have written about it as well. But this is one of those things that has to do with toxic load as well, because toxins like metals and molds and chemicals will trigger this histamine response and kind of activate it in certain people.
So some people who have spaghetti, you know, may all of a sudden feel like this, like their skin, they may just feel their skin, or they may feel pressure in their head. Or let's say you have a food that you it tasted great to you, but then you put it in your fridge and it sat there for a few days and leftovers produce histamines. You know, maybe we need to spend a little bit more time on that. if you're able to join us again. I just think there's a lot there, and people, that would be an answer that people are looking for. You are just a wealth of knowledge, my friend, and I know, again, you've got so much going on. Thank you for giving us your time today.
You are welcome. I've had so much fun, and I love the idea of a mast cell histamine. I think that would be a great topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And friends, you know, if you want to text in your questions, I'll write them down and we'll just keep plugging away and get to as many as we can in the days ahead. Hope you found some encouragement here. I just want you to be encouraged. There are steps you can take. There are answers to your questions. You don't have to live with certain things that you probably think you do have to. And that's why we're here, to help equip you. And God's going to help you, and you're going to be on your way to better health. Hope you have a blessed, blessed day, and we'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Susie Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.